We're up to Megillas Rus, and it was voted to read it with the tune, so we'll just begin, and we'll do the introduction as we run through it, okay? Vayehi bimei shifot ha-shofetim, vayehi ra'av ba'aretz. It wasn't the day that the judges were judged, and there was a famine in the land. Our sages say, vayehi bimei connotes a time of sadness. We're about to read about something that's sad. Shifot ha-shoftim, the judges were judged, meaning the judges were not up to par. People were looking at the judges. A judge would try to give a ruling, and the person would look at him and say, who are you to tell me you're far worse than I am? And the person would have a claim. He would be in the right. Vayhi bimei shifot ha-shoftim. What is the first letter of the Megillah? Vav. You will notice that the whole Megillah, every pasuk begins with the letter Vav, except for 8. The whole Megillah, every pasuk will begin with the letter Vav, aside from 8 psukim, and maybe we'll still discuss the meaning of that. Yes?
And what's
the reason for that? Let's see if you guys can catch the 8 which are without Vav. Don't do that now. It's a challenge for the morning of Shavuos. That'll help you stay awake. Okay? So there was a famine in the land. The Midrash discusses the famous famines in the land. This is one of them. Famine means there's no food. Vayelech ish mi beit lechem Yehuda. And a man, ish, connotes a man of stature. This is a very important man. He went from the house of bread in Judah. He went from being a house that would be the source of bread in Judah. We know Beis Lechem is the name of a place, but he also went from the essence of being Beit Lechem, the house of bread. He was feeding people in Judea. Lagur b'shdei Moav. His initial intent was to be a sojourner. He wasn't going to live in Chutz Laaretz. He was just going to wait out the storm in the fields of Moab. He didn't even want to go into the city. Then they had problems out in the field. They went into the city. They saw that the city was completely immoral. They packed their bags and went back out to the fields. Huvishto Shnevanav. Him, his wife, and his 2 children. Notice, we're not yet told who he is. And everyone else is secondary to him. It's as though he is the focus. So our Megillah begins with a terrible story. There's a man who's very important and very wealthy, and he is supporting the community, and he leaves that role. He could stay, but his assets are being diminished. It's costing him money to feed everyone. So he leaves the role of taking care of others. So our Megillah begins with a man who walks away from his responsibility to society, to the Jewish people. The antithesis of chesed. Our sages say the whole essence of this Megillah is chesed. The point that the Megillah is trying to drive home is the importance of chesed. And that's why the Megillah is the foundation of the Davidic dynasty. Because being a king in Judaism is about giving. Wherever in Judaism, wherever we encounter authority, authority is defined as the responsibility of taking care of others. Guys, did you get that? Authority, wherever you encounter it in Judaism, authority means the responsibility to take care of others. So if the halacha says that within a marriage, the husband has a certain authority over the assets of the family, that means he has the responsibility to work. Guys, that's what it says in your ksuba. When you sign in a marriage contract, what you're really signing is, I will take care of you. And when you say, you're actually saying, down to the shirt off my back. You're writing that as you're getting married. And if there's limited funds, you take care of the wife before you take care of yourself. So great, you have this authority, right? No, it's responsibility. If the king has authority, it's responsibility. So the pious king that could have been the Messiah, his name was Chizkiyahu. Ooh, he's king over the people of Israel. Yes, he eats a dry piece of bread and a simple flask of water every day. That's his meal. His officers are eating tons of meat on a daily basis, but he doesn't, because that's a real king. Because authority is not about taking, it's about giving. And that's the revelation that Joseph has in the meeting with the brothers. He says, guess what? I figured it out. 13 years have passed. When I was 17 years old, I dreamt of you all bowing to me, right? But now I realize it was all about wheat. I had to go through being sold into slavery, slandered, jailed. All of that so I could be here to service you. Now I understand the kingship is about giving, about helping others. If I've been sent down here, it's not about the royal pompous fanfare that I get here. It's about being able to serve everyone else and taking care that everyone has food. So this man, Ish, whose name we're about to discover is Eli Melech, he thinks to me will come the throne. It's not his real name. It's the name the Navi gives him so that we understand who he was. He was a man who thought he would be the leader of Israel. Comes this Megillah and tells us, no, 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 he's going to die. He will not be the leader of Israel because a leader isn't concerned firstly about their own assets. A leader is firstly concerned about taking care of others. And that's why we're going to see how the Megillah develops into teaching us where the source of David is. Where do we encounter someone who is willing to give at their own expense? And that will be where Elimelech, where the kingdom really comes from. So he leaves. And he goes to the people who are known for withholding food. The Moabites, right? We're traveling in the desert, and there's one nation that boycotts us. Everyone else is willing to do business. There's a nation called Moab, and Ammon. Ammon and Moab, they both say, we're boycotting. We're not selling them any food. We're not doing any business with them. We're not willing to let the Jews have any food from us. So the people who withhold their food, okay, so Elimelech goes to their territory. Yo, were you saying something? I didn't hear you.
I have to go.
Oh, have a safe trip.
The bus. Guys, see you around. Thanks for sure.
V'shem ha'ish Elimelech v'shem Ishto Naomi. His wife's name was Pleasant. What a nice name. Naomi, Pleasant. Veshem Shenevanav. The name of his two sons, that's unusual. It's as though they don't have an identity. Imagine you introduce your family and you say, this is my wife, and these are my five kids. It's not, this is Chaim, and this is Maishi, and this is Esther, and this is Bracha. No, these are the five of them. You made them all my five kids, right? Shnei Banav, his two sons, as though they don't have an identity separate from him. And we're going to see that that's an ongoing theme here. And that's part of the message that Elimelech really turned his back not only on the people of Israel, but he also turned his back on his own family. And we're going to see everyone's going to pay the price. Machlon, forgiveness. Vichilion, and annihilation. Ephratim. What does Ephratim mean? What a wonderful names, you know. Forgiveness and annihilation. Was that really their names? We're not sure. Our sages say that Machlon will actually be forgiven for his sins because he ends up marrying Ruth, who ends up producing a continuation for Machlon. And Chilion marries Orpah, who becomes a part of our nemesis, a part of the Philistine people. She will go on to give birth to Goliath. She will actually propagate many enemies of the Jewish people and herself will try to murder David and Yoav. She's his wife, his widow is going to have a long history with the Jewish people. So, Machlon v'Chilion Ephratim, they were men of importance. Mi Beit Lechem Yehuda. They left the most important city, the city of bread, the city of Judea. Vayavos de Moav v'yehu sham. And what happened to them is the unfortunate story of so many Jews that go to Chutz Arts for a short period of time. Okay, they're just going to make a few bucks, right? And they end up there, vayihu sham, they're there. Kamarnu, vayihu means their existence became sham, there. So, our history is filled with that. Everywhere you go, you see that, right? Vayamot Elimelech ish Naomi. And Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died and died and died. What does that mean? Ah, so there are many levels of death. Because there are many levels of life, right? We know four people are considered dead, right? What are the four people who are considered dead? Ah, nichashuv kemet, person who's impoverished, says though he's dead. Suma chashuv kemet, person who's blind is considered dead. Mitzora chashuv kemet, person who has tzaras is considered dead. And mishen lo yeladim, he who does not merit to have kids is also considered dead, right? Those are the four that are considered dead. We can indicate all of them from the verses, right? Anati chamet, Aaron says about Miriam when she has tzaras. Rachel says to Yaakov, v'imayin meitanoch, if you don't give me kids, it says, though I'm dead. Right? Okay, throughout Tanakh, you'll see these four concepts. Back to our story. So Elimelech loses all his wealth. It's an evolvement. First his cattle goes, then his assets go, then his fields go, then his house goes. God is edging his way towards his life, just like tzaras works. It starts outside and it creeps inward. So there's a message. Maybe you'll get the hint when this goes, that goes, the other thing goes. Our sages say, open up the book of Job. You read the second chapter, you start hearing about the destruction, right? One after another after another. It's in the first chapter already, right? The house collapses, the cattle collapses, they're attacked, and the sheep is captured. What?
That's all at once.
Right, one after another. Who said it's all at once? Vayhi Hayom it says. But Tavo Sheva. You're assuming that Vayhi Hayom means that same day. Okay. I would assume that too. Coming back to our... it says the messengers came at once. You're right. Ad zeba veze medaber. Meaning the messengers came to Eov on the same day. That you do see from the verses. Okay, back to our story. So our sages say the same thing happened to Elimelech. That same evolvement of destruction, destruction, destruction until he dies. Who dies? Elimelech. Now suddenly he is described as Naomi's husband. Wait a second. A minute ago she was described as his wife. So our sages say, yeah. When a guy dies, the one who feels it the most is his wife. No one suffers like the wife. It's true that when it comes to the laws of mourning, the one who expresses the most mourning is the child. Because a wife can have another husband, a husband can have another wife, a child can have another sibling, but parents, that's all you got. This is your father, this is your mother. Ain't no substitute. So that's why in mourning, a child will mourn 12 months over their parents and not over anyone else. But when it comes to actually who suffers the brunt of the passing, our sages say, "Ena ish met ela liishto." When a man dies, the only one who really feels it is the wife. Everyone else, it's different. They have their lives.
You think their life changes the most radically?
She's the one that feels it the most. She's a vatishair hi ushnei vaneha. And they were like remnants, you know. When you finish a meal and you have leftovers, that's what they were like. They were the leftovers. And that's what they felt like. The essence of life passed. Naomi and her two kids are left over. Now that dad's dead, Vayisu lahem nashim moaviyot. So they married Moabite women. They came from a family, a reputable family. They came from the important family Ephratim. They were descendants of the great Miriam, who's also known as Ephrat. So they were a very important family. So they married into a very important family, the two daughters of two kings, or the king, Eglon, the king, the Moabite king. So they marry the princesses, even in this dire financial state, they marry the princesses. They were already self-sufficient financially, and God hasn't punished them yet. Meaning, he first punishes Elimelech. They still have their assets. Now they marry these princesses, and they're going to lose everything too. I'm not sure where I'm getting that from, that they still have their assets. But that's what I remember. I didn't see that this year. Right, right. No, they definitely had some assets left. That we see because they signed on to a dowry, they signed on to ksuba, and later on they have nothing to pay it with. So that means when they got married, they had the assets to sign on to it. Yes, so that's where I'm getting it from. Yes? Oh! What a great question. Are Jews prohibited to marry Moabites? Yes, they are. That's why they didn't do it while their father was alive. Okay, so here we run into two interpretations, two conflicting understandings as to what went on here. One understanding says they married non-Jewish women. Their father died. They're in Moabite territory. There are Moabite girls around, so they married Moabite girls. Now that's a huge temptation. That's a huge temptation. Here we learn what can happen when a person goes to Chutz La'aretz. That can happen here in Israel too. There are a lot of Russian girls walking around who aren't Jewish. We have over a quarter of a million people here who are not Jewish, who came just with the Russian Aliyah, and the number is probably double to triple that. So a person has to be careful here in Israel too. But here, hopefully, what you're seeing around you, you have a choice of Jewish women. A person goes to Chutz La'aretz, there's a huge temptation. And that's where Elimelech made a mistake on a second level. He went out to Chutz La'aretz. If a person has to ask himself, what are the odds that my children will marry Jewish, my grandchildren will be Jewish? So then, so far, right now, the odds are much higher in Israel. The statistics we all know, the intermarriage rate in Chutz La'aretz is huge. So people like to deceive themselves. They want to say, yeah, but in the Orthodox world, it's less. Oh, it's less than the general world. But I think if I compared notes with every sibling of mine, we each have at least one person in our class who intermarried. At least one. At least one. So we like to tell ourselves that it's a better statistic, but the statistic's still pretty harsh. It's still pretty harsh. And who knows where it'll be in 10 years. So a person has to at least ensure that he's in a religious environment. You're going to university, you got to go to a place with our good Jewish girls. That has to be at the forefront of your decision. Only those should be options. You can't go to a place where your lab partner is going to be some Chinese girl. It's you got to go to a place where hopefully you're going to have a Jewish girl. If it's a Jewish Chinese girl, I have no problem. So we see they fell with these Moabite women. That's one understanding.
You said Kisuba, though,
right?
That would imply that they converted.
Okay, second understanding.
Okay.
No, because even if they were non-Jews, they had some kind of prenups, yeah? They had some kind of contract. Second understanding is that they did a conversion. Sure, they did a conversion. They're going to marry non-Jewish women. They did a conversion. But it was like a conversion where we signed the papers. But their heart wasn't in it. As we will see, that when the time comes, Arpah is very quick to go back to her father and her pagan ways. That very night, we're going to see the very night she leaves, she sleeps with 100 men. She's out on the town. I mean, she's a busy lady, right. And we're going to see that even Naomi knows deep down at heart that that conversion didn't carry too much weight. No one really had any interest. It was more like covering up. You know, okay, we did a conversion. It's like people sometimes do that. I have the paper, I'm a Jew. But you know you're not. You know you didn't mean it. You know you didn't have that intention. You weren't ready to do the mitzvos. So we're going to see as the story unfolds. He was first, sorry. Yes.
Well, I think
he was first, okay.
As you said, like the elevator, like convinces them, tries to convince them to go back to their idolatry or whatever, and she wouldn't obviously have done that if they had, like,
correct.
So are we dealing with, like, obviously, in Ruth's case, it must have been a real. Is it? Were they real conversions? Were they fake conversions?
Weren't real. That's what we see from here. There was room to say, we converted them. We married Jewish women, right. But you see that there was still room to have another conversion.
So Ruth must have had a second then, right?
Right.
But my question is: first, where are you going to find a Beit Din? There's only two Jewish guys in the fields of Moab.
Right. Great question.
There's no conversion before she marries Boaz, so then you assume that she's already converted. So
she converts when she comes back to Israel. We'll see. She will still undergo another conversion. Okay, so let's move forward. Vayisur lahem nashim moaviyot. Notice the pasuk speaks about them as a pair. They married Moabite women, but suddenly the women are described separately. Shemachat Opa. The name of one was Orpah. What does Orpah mean? The nape of the neck. It's a way of saying she turns her back on people, as we will see she will do. Bishema Shenit Rut. And the name of the second one was Song. Rut means to give pleasant song. So the name of the second one was, she was actually going to be the source of the pleasant songs of King David. Rut, what's the numerical value of Rut?
606.
Correct. She took upon herself 606 mitzvot on top of the seven Noahites. Vayeshevu sham ke'esel shanim. So now they're settling there for about 10 years as they lose their assets and they have no children. Sound familiar? We have in the tribe of Judah other people who were married and had no kids. Brothers who were married and had no kids. And were married to a very pious woman who's going to be the progenitor of the Davidic dynasty. Remember? Judah's children, Er and Onan, both marry a woman named Tamar and have no kids with her. And then... What?
That was their own fault.
Right. Vayamutu gam shneihem machlon vechilion. And the two of them, notice how the Navi continues referring to them as the pair, they too died. The Navi is comparing their death with their father's death. Forgiveness and annihilation. The two of them die. Vatisha'er ha'isha mishnei yeladeha umei isha. And the woman remained as leftovers from her two sons who died and her husband who died, and suddenly she is Ha-i-sha, the woman of stature. Until now, she was Hera's wife, their mother. Now she is Ha-i-sha, the woman, as we shall see. She is quite the woman. Vatakomi vechaloteha. So, it was Pesach. They had no food. They were so impoverished, they couldn't even afford to bury the dead. Arpa and Rus take their own money and they wrap the dead and bury them. They forgo all the dowry that they've been owed. They see their mother-in-law is finished. She's bankrupt. She's got nothing to offer them. And now they get word that there's food back in Israel. So on Yom Tov itself, they get up. It's pikuach nefesh. They're that hungry. The merchants have been coming by and talking. You know, in Israel, the situation's much better. So they're going to start walking barefoot. And that's what the pasuk says. Vatashov misdei Moav. She returned from the fields of Moav. Ki shamea bisdei Moav. Because she heard an angel came and told her in the fields of Moav. Ki fakad Adonai et amo. That God has taken note of his nation as Boaz has been praying. And through his prayer, there's been rain and they've been forgiven. Latet lahem lachem, to give them food. And there was a massive impact. When a tzaddik leaves, the whole city feels it. So she leaves and suddenly the city seems different. I remember when Rav Mordechai Leo passed away. So long as he was alive, we always knew that's his shul and that's his house. And it was a part of the community. You knew you were living here next to Rav Mordechai Leo. You saw him once, you saw him twice. I dated a girl once who lived down the hall from him. And she told me that her father was once walking out of the house. He was just going to get the mail, so he had his slippers on. And Rav Mordechai Leo came down the elevator, and no one was accompanying him. So he saw the Rav walking alone. So he stuffed the mail in his pocket and started walking with the Rav. The Rav shouldn't walk alone to shul. So he's walking down the street in his slippers, you know, next to the Rav, but he said, you know. So that's like the whole family knew they were living next door to Rav Mordechai Leo, okay? The whole city felt it. You knew it. That was a part of the city. When he passed away, it's a different Kiryat Moshe. It's not the same town anymore. So when Naomi left, the whole city felt it. They felt it. The tzaddik left the city. Vateitze, the same thing when Yaakov leaves. And that's why the Megillah reiterates that she left to indicate that it was felt. Mina makom asher hayeta shama, from the place she had been. Ushtei chaloteha ima, and the two daughters-in-law are with her. Notice again, we view them as a unison. Vateilach na vaderech. They walked on the path, no shoes. The Shulchan Aruch tells you to buy one garment of clothing, shoes. Because that's something that everyone needs. It's something that's most elementary, and it's elementary for one's health and well-being. So you need shoes, but they didn't even have that. That's why it says they walked on the path. Lashuv el Eretz Yehuda, to return to the land of Judah.